So I'm really happy to see so many friendly faces here. We hadn't originally expected that it would be such a big gathering, but anyway, you're all most welcome. Last year, with Helmut's help, we have brought out this little book. It's called Stars in the Soup. And it is a collection of my poems. The earliest poem in the book was written when I was 14 in 1956, and the last one in 2003. Most of them, all except that very first one, have been written since I came to Oroville. And today I like to share some of them with you in the company of my very old friend Gordon. Gordon and I met in Aspiration in 1971, and we've been close friends since. And he is also a poet, but his very special gift is his flute, and he offered to provide some musical background today, which we hope you will enjoy. I'm going to read 9 or 10 poems from this collection, and afterwards, anybody who would like to have a copy of the book, you can get it. And some of you have already received, I know that. If you wish, you can make an offering in support of Savitri Bhavan, and there will be people there to help you if you would like to do that. So I'm actually not going to read from the book. Going to read from something a bit bigger. And the first one is the first poem, the one from 1956. I think I would like to tell you a little bit about each of these poems. One thing, as I was thinking this afternoon, or looking again at these poems, I thought that it might happen that you read them and you wonder, well, what is that about? It might happen. And so I'm going to give you, I can't tell you what it is about. These are about words and humor, I hope, and each of them relates to some kind of experience that I've had. The experience that sparked off this first one was when a friend of my parents, actually a lady that I hardly knew, presented me a copy of the Faber Book of Modern Verse. Whether it was for my birthday or not, I don't remember. And I read through that book as if it were a novel from the beginning to the end. I had loved poetry for many years, but I'd never thought about writing poetry. But when I'd finished reading all the poems in that book, I sat down and wrote this one. It's called March Madness. I'm going to read the first few words of each poem, and then Gordon will play. So, March Madness, and it begins. The demon who's been sleeping in my blood all through the tyrant winter's dreary reign now wakes. Thank you. demon who's been sleeping in my blood all through the tyrant winter's dreary reign, now wakes. Not like a hedgehog shuffling off his coverlet of quills when lightly tickled by the springtime sun, but as the sun himself jumps up behind the grey beard, bald paint hills. In December he lay dormant, dead I thought, but now with this first spring of spring, he leaps out of his bed of broken dreams to set the old March madness off again. Sanskrit and Sri Aurobindo's works and mathematics and paintings, and Gordon came and gave us poetry lessons. He was, it's one of the things he was doing as a teacher in the States, and he shared with us some of his insights, how to write poems. And one day he told us that each of us should bring to the class an object that we would write a poem about. And I wrote about this stone. It's called Remembering. Smoothly contoured, cool and heavy in my hand, its glassy skin pocked and pitted, this stone speaks. Distant torrents. one scarred and bumpy surface tells that once it was torn rough and raw away from the side of its mother mountain. And these encircling veins remind how long before this substance seethed and folded over, was kneaded like dough, baked in the earth's furnace, pressed out to cool and petrify. Long before that, perhaps, atoms now packed dense inside this lump flared out, a cloud in the solar wind. Long it lay oblivious. But now another force, more resistless than all these, has carried it far from that river-carved mountain to lie here. Cool and heavy to a human hand, questioned by a human gaze, remembering. Deep Places. It dates from 1984. It was quite a tough time in Oroville, and Helmut thought it would do me good to go on a trek in the Himalayas. So I was privileged to join one of the treks organized by Tara of the Sri Aurobindo Ashram Delhi branch. And it was a wonderful trek. And the climax of the trek was when we had to go up to a shrine on a high snow-covered mountain peak. And I was enjoying the trek so much, and the forests and the greenery and the scenery. And I looked up at that peak and I thought, no, I'm not going up there. So that's somehow what is expressed in this poem. I'm in no mood for mountains. Too near down-pressing sky, too barren, bright, unmysteried they lie. Better by far the lower forests, where water gurgles out of sight, and calling, chuckling, birds unseen flit from green to deeper green. There, suddenly, a single bloom strikes to the heart's enchanted depths with its clear bell note of deep blue. Or let me swim far from all shallows in the still waters where the kraken sleeps, where whales slide singing through the shadowy deeps. There let me dive and drown all littleness and all fatigue. But best of all, in deep embracing interstellar spaces, beyond the sky lid, free of every limit, to float forever, marveling through endless symphonies of stars. Many of my of these poems in the book have been written on journeys or inspired by experiences on journeys. This next one is called The Evening Dress, and it is sparked off by the evening scene beside the sea and the beach resort of Kovalam in Kerala. Assail the stony self-absorption of these unresponsive rocks. This next one's also inspired by a site at Kovalam. There's a strange phenomenon there as the little ripples of the waves come in the bay. There's some kind of interference, and it's as if little animals zip like this in this direction or that direction along the edge of the ripples. So that has inspired this poem, which is called The Dragons. On the edge of the twilight ocean, the baby dragons innocently play. Innocently play. Their curving bodies, formed of spray, zip this way, that way, splash and crash across the bay, leapfrogging on their way the foamy fingers of nymphs who tirelessly push the wrinkling ripples one by one to shore. Further out and deeper down, in palaces of coral and shining shell, the dragon mothers gather, sipping seaweed tea, showing off their burnished scales, dripping emeralds and pearls. As they play mahjong, their elegant tails flip this way, that way, sending great waves into the bay where their dragon children boisterously play. In the profoundest gulf of all, the father of all dragons sleeps. If he should should rise in fury, lash and roar and rampage. The gulfs might burst apart and rip this way, that way. Amidst the gigantic surges of his rage, spilling those unimagined riches out onto this tranquil shore where we so lazily sit about, not at all expecting the ending of an age. Several of the poems in the book, in fact the whole section that's called A New Line in Hats, were written at a time when I was regularly every Sunday doing a couple of hours chamber duty at Matrimandir, and afterwards I would walk home through the forest, and it seemed as if gradually week after week, every week, there was a poem. And this one is called Picnicking, and it came up because as I was walking back through the forest from Matrimandir towards Grace, I found a group of people had parked their bikes on the grass beside the road, and they were having a picnic. So it's called Picnicking. Don't you want to go a little deeper into this forest? By. Surely beyond those bushes there's a better glade to rest in. Surely brighter blossoms grow there, taller trees casting deeper shade. See how that jewel-plumaged bird entices us, flashing from branch to branch. See how emerald grasses gleam beneath those boughs. Is that a golden dome, dappled with sun and shadow, looking back at us with liquid gaze, then gone, a flash of white? Somewhere beyond, there must be a river. must be a river, grey, green and greasy, or clear flashing between white sands and tall tree trunks festooned with orchids. Can't we go further in, deeper into the mystery? You're afraid? You say we must take care. There may be pygmies with poisoned arrows, or the king of the jungle. Ah, what better way to go, downed by his paw, his breath warm in the ear, his tongue upon my neck. One is called Utter Blackness, and I read it remembering fellow Aurevillian poet Lloyd, who appreciated my poems and especially liked this one, which was written. This utter blackness is, of course, a psychological blackness, and this one was written for a friend who was battling that kind of psychological blackness. one, which may be the last one, is called At the Fish Ladders. It refers to an experience I had in January 1970, a few months after first hearing about Sri Aurobindo, coming into contact with Sri Aurobindo and the mother. And I was staying alone in my mother and father's little house, their holiday house and later retirement home, a little stone cottage on the edge of a steep hillside running down to a deep river valley, which was maintained as a trout river, the anglers jealously protecting their angling rights. It's called At the Fish Ladders. It's January again. The river's in full spate between snow-laden banks and branches. In this black and white landscape, again and again flashes steel silver. Trout are leaping the ladders. Why now, when all's at its hardest? It's no fun for the fish, driven against the flow, battered and bruised by the torrent. Again and again, they fall back, thwarted. Nearing the end of their course, they must face its greatest challenge. How many will reach the quiet spawning grounds above to pour out their last strength in sacrifice to the future? How few? Silver springing against the foaming, glassy rush that pours over. The patient breathing of the winter woods, dark, leafless, damp beneath their load of snow. a sudden sparkle of bird song, twig crackling underfoot. I sense life eddy and slither out of one form into another. Feel you, feeling each of us within your whole. Plunged in the torrent, like fish we can bathe and leap, battered and bruised but elated in its breathtaking onrush, goaded forever upwards against the current by your insistent will. Tell her today. The collection is called Stars in the Soup. That isn't the title actually of a poem, it's the title of a section, but I will read the poem in which that phrase occurs. It's called Pearl Fishing. Useless all day. Doesn't make for practicality. The pull of the dark tide calling me under to coral gardens and pearl beds loosens my grip. My fingers flutter and lose hold. plans and duties fade, and the forms that anchor us to the surface, leaving beds unmade, dishes unwashed, important messages unanswered, and urgent letters unwritten, I dip again and again in the dark flood, and come up dripping, disoriented, clutching some bright or curious fragment, some morsel of frozen music, turning it over and over, tasting its strange saltiness, I end up sprinkling stars in the soup.